2016 marked the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party. The men in the Black Panther Party often got most of the attention, but women played a major role. Stay tuned and listen to Barbara Easley Cox speak about her experience as a member of the Black Panther Party from 1967 to 1971 and her continued commitment to the 10-point platform of land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. Stay tuned. Join me, Corinne Fregoni, next on Through the Eyes of Women. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. The Black Panther Party was a revolutionary organization that fought for the empowerment, liberation, and dignity of blacks in the United States. Among its many members, there were brilliant activists, community organizers, writers, artists, and thinkers. And yet, the Black Panther Party was primarily regarded as a male-dominated organization. However, like most revolutionary movements, there were many women who served important and influential roles as rank-and-file members and as leaders and spoke out against the sexism within the party. As male leadership faced political repression, incarceration, assassination, and exile, women members played increasingly strategic roles. Today, I have the honor of talking with Barbara Easley Cox, member of the Black Panther Party from 1967 to 1971, working in party offices in Oakland, Philadelphia, New York, and the international branch of the party in Algeria. I came across her name in a review of a beautiful book of photographic portraits of former members of the Black Panther Party created and published by Susan Lamina called Revolutionary Grain, Celebrating the Spirit of the Panthers in Portraits and Stories. Susan and Barbara just returned from Sonoma State University, where they participated in a panel discussion with former members of the party discussing their time in the party. The photos are amazing and capture this profound spirit. I encourage anyone who can travel to Sonoma State Library to view the exhibit of the portraits, which will be running from March 20th to May 31st. But let's get back to Barbara. She has a very interesting story to tell us about the legacy this remarkable organization has inspired that is vital to the understanding of our current situation today. Welcome, Barbara, to our show.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you very much.
I'd like to start with a history of the Black Panther Party. It's been over 50 years since it was founded. That means a lot of people in our audience were just a glimmer in their parents' eyes, and they may not know much about the party. I surely appreciate your giving us a brief history.
Well, not just their parents. I would say grandparents at this point, maybe two generations. As you know, Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton started the party in October 1966 because of the injustices that they saw around them. But they came up with the 10-point platform and program. And I would encourage people, if they wanted more details on that they go to our website, www.itsabouttimebpp.com. The website was created by Billy Jennings approximately 1998, and it gives more information than I could share with you at this time. But it's been a great 50 years, and I haven't forgotten anyone or anything.
Well, there have been a lot of misconceptions about the Black Panther Party. What are some of those misunderstandings, and how would you respond?
Well, it's true what you said about most of the time you hear stories about men. But women were very important, and I personally would like to give credit where credit is due. So I have to acknowledge again the genius of Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, Elvis Cleaver, David Hilliard, and too many other to mention. But Kathleen, Elaine Brown, Erica Huggins were the three women that stood out during that period of time. And something you said about attitude and behavior of men. And that is one of the things that always bothers me. It was a small part of a big issue. Yes, there might have been some misbehavior, but I also look at the youth, and I regret nothing that happened. Now, this is Women's Historical Month, March, and I've seen a lot of celebrations around the world and giving credit to women. And being a woman these 55-plus years, I did what was called for.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I didn't see a separation between the men and myself or too many of the other sisters. Some of us were older, and some of us were more powerful in our attitudes, pushing the bonds of the glass ceiling, as they say in business. But for me, being a daddy's girl, my father said, push forward, let no man stop you. And I was like, okay, that'll work. And then I must also confess, I was married to Donald Cox, D.C., the field marshal. That gave me a little privilege, you know, a little more power to move around, okay?
I think I understand. What difference do you think women made in the party?
I think that we, as individuals, when we were approached as a Panther woman, we let people know real quick, no division of labor. But also, those of us who studied hard and worked hard, we presented a picture of strength. And personally, many people were swayed by the conversations I would have with them because they, too, thought that men were chauvinistic, is the word I want to use. But women showed other people come and work with us, whether you were a party member, a community member, a business person. We added a feminine touch that was most important.
Do you think it was being more inclusive is what women contributed?
Yes, yes. I understand what you said. I don't have any more thoughts on that per se, but yes.
I would really like for you to tell us more about the 10-point program of the Black Panther Party. I think it's important that people understand that.
I'm not going to read them all off because I don't want to take up your time, but I'll read a couple. Point number 4, we want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. And that's exactly where I find myself today. I've been in the Bay Area almost a month, and it's very heart-wrenching to see the homeless. Living in Philadelphia, we have cold weather, so you don't see tents and tent villages on the sidewalk. Now, we do have shelters, but no homeless like that. We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. I would like to be a little more inclusive with that and say black, brown, Native American, and Asian people. Because we would always say all oppressed people. And number 10, which says it all, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, and justice, and peace. I think those are human needs. They include all people.
I would agree with that. I remember hearing a story about Fred Hampton really emphasizing this coalition of people of all colors, and he invited the Young Patriots, which was a group out of Appalachia, who came to these meetings. And Fred Hampton was trying to find commonalities between everyone, which is what made him so powerful and probably so threatening to the FBI and to J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh, I would agree. I would agree. I remember Maggie Coon, who started the Gray Panthers. And the first time I had gone to one of their meetings, you know, you had older white women with gray hair, white hair, but they were so feisty and demanding and wanting rights for elderly people, you see. And I was impressed with just the name Panther. So if you were an Israeli Panther, an Algerian Panther, a Australian Panther, the French Panther, Mexican Panther, I was like, we're really doing something bigger than ourselves. And we were so young back then. So I love the idea of having that experience. I'm not a big ego kind of person. I like to talk to people in my house. And sometimes when I'm in my house, they look at me and say, you really did that? And I go, yes, I got my passport to prove it. But I am so grateful that we're part of history. Maybe a small part, but we were there. And I am grateful for the experience.
What drew you into the party originally?
Don't laugh. But I think black leather jackets, afros, and berets.
Well, okay. That's as good a reason as any.
But I went to school with Emory, and he had invited other artists to come to school.
That's Emory Douglas?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, we presented O.J. Simpson with a African-American award. Okay, I'm sure he threw it away later, but but you know, I was, and my sister and other ladies and men were impressed with that 10-point platform and program. So that's what drew me in. And the strike at San Francisco State College with the Black Student Union. So. And then there were other ethnic groups that were starting to get involved. And the next thing I knew, I was a full-time Panther.
Is this where you met your future husband?
Yes. Emory introduced me to him, as a matter of fact. So Emory is a very important person in my life.
Well, tell us about your international experiences. In my introduction, I mentioned that you worked in Algeria. How did that happen?
Well, as you know, Kathleen and Elvidge Cleaver were there. They had been there approximately 1 year. My husband joined them because they wanted to indict him for conspiracy, etc. And Kathleen and I were pregnant at the same time. So my husband said, come over and go to North Korea with her. You're both pregnant at the same time. You'll have the babies together. But I enjoyed, I stayed in Korea, 3 months or so. When we came back to Algiers, Elvidge had secured a little embassy, a house for us to live in. At that time, there were a lot of freedom movements, as you know, anti-apartheid in South Africa, Angola, Southwest, so many, I can't remember all the names, but I had to find something for me to do because I did not speak French. Kathleen spoke French, so she was always busy with interpreting something. So myself and Charlotte O'Neill, who lives in Tanzania now, we started a nursery. And if you came through with your child, we took your child. So you met a lot of people.
If you're just tuning in, this is Corinne Fregoni, and you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. My guest today by phone is Barbara Easley Cox, And we're talking about her years of experience with the Black Panther Party. Barbara.
Yes.
You were mentioning your experiences in Algeria, and you ran a nursery for little children.
For women visitors who came with children. Then I would go to the embassies. I set up a library, which was later lost, unfortunately. But the thing that I used to do was visit other women. Their husbands in these liberation groups were always busy. So I started going to visit women. And what was so funny about that, in hindsight, if you sit in a woman's kitchen and you have something in common, you start talking. And then women tell women other things that they don't tell men. So when I would go home later that night, I would tell my husband, did you know that so-and-so did so-and-so? And so-and-so is meeting with so-and-so. And if you better... And he was like, where'd you get this information? I haven't heard anything. And I said I was talking to his wife. So I became a valuable tool. I put it like that. And I did have the opportunity with Kathleen to travel to Germany, Paris, Sweden, just on little things that she would do, like speaking engagements. And then when the children, well, especially in 71, when the split came down between International and Oakland, Eldridge's finances had been stopped by the government. So we had to downsize our local community. And I chose to go to Germany to work against the Vietnam War and be around GIs coming and going between Germany and back to the world, which they called America at that time. So for a year and a half, I stayed in Germany. You gain a lot of experience when you're free to do your own work. And I work with a group called Voice of the Lumpen, and we stayed together until about 73.
Lumpen meaning lumpen proletariat?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And was this while you were still a member of the party?
No, it was after the split. 71, I think it might have been about, it must have been around August of 71, there was the split between Eldridge and his factors, or individuals and chapters and branches, and Huey P. Newton. So it was a painful time. It was a painful time because people you had worked with for almost 3 years, all of a sudden you weren't speaking anymore. So that was painful, and it still is. It still is painful because... that's what brings me to California right now, making contact with ex-comrades. Yeah, because as Suzanne says, I'm getting older, so the Panthers must be getting older. But it's been good.
And I imagine the split between Huey Newton and Eldridge Cleaver was devastating for the whole party.
Yes. I can't even talk about that.
Okay. Was there a difference in the strategy or goals between the rank and file members and the leadership before the split?
I would say yes and no. No, because we had a lot of respect for, quote-unquote, our elders or leadership, okay? And I think that's across the board from East Coast to West Coast. And then again... there was always somebody or one of us, and I'm going to include myself in that, who questioned orders. And it depends on the way you question the orders. Some people actually left the party under duress, but some people actually brought up issues before the Central Committee. And once there was a discussion of having more children, women should have more children. And I jumped up and said, who's going to raise them? It was like, what are you talking about? We're working ourselves to the bone. And there were several other women, a couple in leadership or people who were married to leadership, who questioned that. And pretty soon that conversation went away. But interestingly enough, as I travel around and I have the opportunity to speak to women, we share secrets, we share pain, and we try to help each other overcome that and take a broader look at the legacy and what we did. We don't need to go back and constantly bring up pain. And that's very hard to do, Corinne, because as you know, like some of the wars in Africa or any other place at this time, if women are beaten, raped, or beat down with words, it takes a long time to recover. And some people never do. But I always say, let us look at the legacy. And then our private pain, we share. And that works with me when I'm talking to women. It works with me. You know, we cry together, we laugh together, and we give each other a strength that nobody else shares. I remember a woman, Dr. Yvonne King. She had been in Africa for years, and when she made contact with me, we had gone to the Olive Garden. And I love mussels. I order a big bowl of mussels. And she starts talking. And for 15 to 20 minutes, she's like, this is what happened. This is what's going on. This is. And I'm like, okay, okay, okay. My muscles got cold. And she must have saw that I was like dazed. She stopped talking, but she said something to me. She said, you're the first person I've had to talk to in almost 15 years that would understand what I was talking about. And that's what I run into when it comes to women, and occasionally a man. Occasionally a man brings up, you're the only person that knows about this. And I'm like, okay. And sometimes they want to tell me things I don't want to hear. You know, 50 years is a long time for some people. But it feels like yesterday to me. It makes me feel good. My spirit is high. My health is good. And I say a prayer once in a while. Okay?
You mentioned the legacy. Tell us more about the legacy of the Black Panther Party. We only have a few minutes left, so I want to hear how profound and important this is to individuals, to you personally, spiritually, politically. I know it had a profound effect on so many people and history.
Yes, and the world. Because even though I know an 18 or 20-year-old college student doesn't have a clue, if I refer them to the website, but if I bring up maybe some music at that time, they know the music. And now with the world in a slight uproar, especially in America, they can relate to the 10-point platform and program. And I always tell college students, I'm not your typical grandmother. And then I say some words that are embarrassing, but poignant, because they wake you right up. They make you want to know more. And that legacy, because we'll fit right behind all the other oppressed people, not just in the Afro-American stories. I mean, you can talk about Harriet Tubman and Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. See, there's something they're going to know. And then we come in and we have created a legacy. I mean, I have a donation at a collection at Temple University in Philadelphia. And I started that with the Bloxon collection. And now the students come, they want to know more, and then they want to meet you. So we're part of history. And, you know, I'm a grain of sand in the annals of time, but I'm there. We're there. And women will always be there. Okay?
I can only say yes.
Good. All right. And thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you so much for an inspiring interview.
Okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Corinne Fragoni. My guest today was Barbara Easley Cox, member of the Black Panther Party in the late 60s and early 70s, and we've been talking about her experiences in the party. To learn more about the history of the Black Panther Party and what's happening now, you can go to this wonderful website, www.itsabouttimebasinboypp.com. It's about time, bpp.com. Through the Eyes of Women is a collaborative effort produced for KHSU located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Katie Whiteside. You can listen to the show again, or to post listener comments, visit our blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.